from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleague Scott McConnell and our newest team member at Lifeway Research, John Theodore. And today we're going to talk about donor research. Welcome, guys, and welcome to the team, John.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Excellent. Now, is it good to be here? How excited are you about being a part of the podcast today?
I'm very excited.
Excellent.
And as well as a little bit intimidated, but
okay.
I'm ready to get hit.
All right. So. Well, we have a sponsor for the podcast that I'm going to read about real quick, and then we'll get to our opening question. So the sponsor for this week's episode is the Christian Standard Bible. The Bible is meant to be read, understood, and shared. So your translation of God's Word should be true to the original and one you like to read. The Christian Standard Bible captures the Bible's original meaning without compromising clarity. An optimal blend of accuracy and readability, this translation helps readers make a deeper connection with God's Word and inspires lifelong discipleship. We are giving away some copies to listeners who tweet to us and tags at CS Bible and at Lifeway Research in their tweets. And my colleagues, after the last podcast, told me they were alarmed that I had left it wide open, that people are going to be able to tweet for years and years and still get free Bibles. So let's limit this to, you got to be one of the first five or six people who tweet to us. I didn't clear with the Bible guys in our prize closet about how many I could give away, so I was keeping it a little vague, but...
Just back the truck up and fill up that closet.
Yes, there we go. So, pre-question... let's start with Scott, and this will give John a chance to think about his answer. John is, as I've suspected, in the Witness Protection Program because he has no footprint on Twitter at all, and has not yet offered up an explanation of why he hasn't had any interest in that. So I would love for you to explain your anonymity here in just a moment. But Scott, you also were a little reluctant, a little hesitant. What are some of the things when to putting yourself out there on Twitter and engaging in social media that just give you pause?
It takes time. You know, to do it well, to stay engaged with people, it takes time. And so I didn't want to step into that space and not do it well and leave people hanging and things like that. So I waited a while. I've actually been on Twitter for a long time, but I was kind of one of those, what do they call them? Stalkers, where you've got an account and then you just kind of poke in there and read other people's stuff, but don't actually contribute to the conversation.
Yeah. I don't know that you want to call yourself a stalker, but. But yeah, that's to me, I guess Twitter is perfect because I do not see it as a time consumer. Now, I don't go in and track with everybody like I would like to sometimes when, you know, I'm not as engaged in what I'm doing. I can keep my lists up and kind of see what's being posted. But as far as getting things out there, it's perfect because you can just blurt. You can just interrupt whatever conversation is happening out there.
And you're a natural at that.
Yes, exactly. And so that's it. And so you just put it out there, and it's a perfectly acceptable medium for blurting. Just a quick blurt, like a little, you know. So I felt like I was born when I landed on Twitter. Felt like I was born for that. So, John, now, if you're in the Witness Protection Program, just give us a signal and we will change and have this cut out.
Well, the issue is if you are, you can't have a Twitter account. So I think that's kind of the bottom line. you know, it's funny because the first time I heard of Twitter was a few years back at Focus on the Family. And somebody in a meeting received a tweet from Jim Daly. And it was Jim commenting on taking his kid to McDonald's. And basically his tweet was, when does this end? I'm like, well, that's interesting. I mean, but I'm just not sure if I have, you know, time for that in my day. It's just one of those things that maybe one day will be of interest. I mean, it's basically you got to get a bunch of people together to really care about what you say. I mean, isn't there a little fear of rejection in that? if you, you know, only have like five people on your Twitter account? Wouldn't that
there's add? A little rejection that goes on Twitter. I think that would be true.
And it's, but I think once you get started, you'll find that you do far more of the rejecting than the. But, you know, some of actually, I would say some of the most interesting people in my Twitter feed are people that may only have like 100 people who follow them, or because I find that they more often than not are the ones who are actually tweeting real thoughts, real insights, and I'm learning something about them. And they may be promote something or retweet something, but sometimes when people when people have thousands of followers, I get suspicious. And if you look at their feed, and we work in a building full of that, so I'm not saying it's awful, but it's I get tired of people who are always trying to teach me something or sell me something. And, you know, I like it as a kind of a give and take. But, you know, I'm going to tweet out this podcast, and, you know, so I'll do that. But, all right. So donor research. What is this, like organ donors, blood donors? What, I mean, there is a kind of a spectrum. What is donor research?
So, yeah, I think maybe to keep it brief so you can keep asking me more questions. The donor experience is really a very large field in academia and in other areas. What ministries especially need most is to understand their donors' attitudes, behaviors, who else that they're giving to. I feel that most organizations today really don't have a good grasp on who their donors are, and they presume a lot that donors love them and want to support them, and that there's a higher priority for them versus other charities that they support. So I just don't think there's a good communication exchange between ministries and their donors.
Now, have you seen why is it that maybe they've just got the impression that their donors love them, are all on board, are happy with everything? How does that perception develop?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I feel like in some senses there's not enough people who work at the organization who come from the business field, specifically marketing and understanding customers and customer behavior. Mostly a lot of these charities are filled with people with ministry backgrounds, and they just don't have that kind of education to understand the customer dynamic, which is basically the same, because people, as they spend money on different brands and products, they spend money on different charities. Research that I've done in the past kind of identifies, especially among the evangelical community, that most are given to about five charities at the same time during a year. And the research also suggests that there's priority. Some are more important than others. And that creates just erratic giving patterns where you might support one charity constantly every month, but then another charity every other year. And then I think ministries internally look at that and say, especially for the ones that are giving every other year, you know, why? And but they kind of target that situation with they're not saying the right thing in their appeal letter. Mm-hmm. Or they're not marketing them to them enough. But in actuality, it's just you're not as important as the other charities that I'm supporting. So it's more of an internal mm-hmm. decision. So
as a ministry tries to find new donors, kind of that quest for new people to support their ministry, how can research help with that? How is that not just a direct marketing effort or just you know, telling their message in new places? What does research add to that?
Yeah, I think, if every ministry had the means, and I think this is just common sense, they should be communicating, facilitating some kind of dialogue with their donors and understanding more about where their ministry fits in amongst other ministries and charities that they support. And I'll add this too, especially in position with the church and tithing, because that's a blurry line sometimes. I mean, people do consider tithing as giving to a charity. It does not specifically be giving to a church. So I think, you know, to answer that is there needs to be some kind of, again, I'll bring it to the real world customer feedback program that's ongoing, where you're constantly having a dialogue with your donors and understanding how they perceive you in juxtaposition against other charities that they're supporting.
What are some of the things that you can learn, an organization can learn from their larger donors to their infrequent donors? Because I know sometimes I get things, you know, I'll make a $100 contribution or a $25, and then I get bombarded with, in the next 5 months, more material. Like, I could have paid for the marketing of all that I got. And
are
I'm
you
like,
talking about your political donations, or is this the...
I was not going to identify, but there's also a really, okay, so I made one of the worst $100 ever spent in my life was a political donation, and I will never do it again because I got, and I'm not making a political statement there. It's just, I got burned. I got a lot of phone calls. I got a lot of terrible mail. And
did you get invited to some really nice dinners as well?
No, I didn't. I didn't get the nice dinner invite. And so, but I got crazy people calling me with all kinds of questions, and I would just get aggravated. So, but I can also, there's a nonprofit I'm thinking of that I gave to, and I just want the mail to stop. But it's one of those nonprofits that you're like, I am too ashamed to write them or to say, please stop contacting me, because that would make me the worst person in the world. So, but
well,
what can
that,
you learn,
you know,
like from the
that,
different types?
That just hits the point, because, you know, when a ministry gets that first donation, there is this kind of inference that you love them. And that's why I'm saying there's so much presumption there. So let me just hit that person with every type of marketing and appeal communication, not thinking that you were probably just wanting to donate to them one time. You just, for some reason, they came across your path and you decided to give them a donation, but they don't know that. That's, I guess, the point that I'm trying to make, because they're not communicating with, mm-hmm. with you. I mean, the ideal situation is that after a first-time gift, it would be great for that charity then to reach out to you and first say, thank you, we appreciate it. But how do you want the relationship to move forward? What kind of communication? How often? And what do you really care about? What do you really want to know about us? So, again, in an ideal world, if everybody had the technology and the means to do that, that would be great. And most don't. But that's what you got to work towards. I think a ministry that can do that stands out. And I think that's beneficial to the ministry, because that would have touched your heart if they reached out to you and say, hey, look, is this just a one-time gift, or do you want to continue giving? Or
I would so.
Do you want 100 appeal letters a month?
Right. I would have so, not? Yeah. But I'm also very open to a very direct approach. Like, hey, let us know how to gauge this, because, you know, we can either drop you a postcard once a year to remind you. So, yeah, that would work, you know. But I also realize, you know, some groups can be intimidated about talking to their donors. I would guess.
No, I don't think so.
Really?
They
you
look
don't
at
think
you
so?
As a bottomless well of financial support. I pretty much think that. Being in those circles for the years
Wait, how
that,
do we get
I've
some
been,
donors?
So.
It's not easy. It's not easy.
Actually, that's what it says next to your name in
right.
the data warehouse. Lizette, bottomless well of cash.
Oh, so, well, that would be yeah. very unfortunate if that was in there.
So when we think about, obviously, there's a lot of types of projects you can do related to donors. Give us some examples of kind of practically when those are done, or the reports are in, you know, is this just a better understanding of the donors, or are there some practical ways that, that this research can help a ministry relate to their donors?
Yeah, I mean, there's different aspects to the research. I mean, of course, there's the primary research that we do here, and many others do, where you actually want to face-to-face, you know, and qualitative, and then do some survey research. But you're really trying to, again, get information about them. You know, what do they like or don't like about the donor experience that you've offered? How could they change that? How can they customize it better to suit your needs? But then again, on the other side, you also have to have that kind of data warehouse and that marketing CRM kind of system to help then manage those expectations or what they like or don't like. So, for instance, you find out that many donors don't like, we'll just make it a little bit more realistic. Some send out two or three fundraising appeals every month. You get that kind of information back, and then you got to put it into your warehouse system. I mean, that's all the systems that are sending those out. So to me, there's the primary research aspect, and then that's got to marry with the fundraising communication systems in the background that are running it all, and work closely with them to kind of produce the experience that many have. And I'm sorry, you know, there's the other side of it, too, that some do want two or three appeal letters every month. It doesn't bother them. I mean, that's the kind of situation where that ministry is probably ranked one or two among the five or ten that they're giving to. They do love the ministry. They want communication. But again, it's like the business world. It's segmentation. Most donor bases are just like customer bases. They're fragmented. There's different groups that want different relationships, care differently about the cause, and want different behavior and different engagement. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it kind of sounds like there's a lot of similarities to a customer experience because, you know, if we really believe in a ministry we donate to, it's not uncomfortable for us to be engaging with them, but it also can get very uncomfortable very fast. But that's true as I walk into a store. It's true of the encyclopedia salesman that comes to my door. You know, those can be very uncomfortable customer situations.
Wait, encyclopedia salesmen still come to doors?
Okay, sorry. I'm trying to think what the last one was selling. The last one was selling...
insects.
But yes. The bugs.
I think they all have Twitter accounts now, the encyclopedia.
Right. Well, they can't get in touch with you then.
Good. The exterminator, that one was really tempting because I could just imagine all those bugs from my neighbors that just bought that, you know, running over to my house. And it was like, you know, I don't have a problem today, but tomorrow I might.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, those interactions can get really uncomfortable really fast, and yet they can be really good relationships. And just a little bit of information on the research side, you know, and marrying that up with your communication and your direct marketing efforts, you know, sounds like it can be a real win.
You know, I think the bottom line is just in terms of an underlying message is to know your donors. I think that's really just the key. Know who really love you. Know who are just there, want to donate once every other year or every 5 years. And try to shape the donor experience per those people's needs and desires. And now with technology, you really can. You know, there can be those communication systems online to give feedback, to say, look, I don't want an appeal letter every month, maybe every 6 months. But the problem is most fundraising managers don't really want to do that. And that's like another side of the story. Fundraising managers, their job is to raise money. They set a budget, they set a goal, and they've got to meet it. So, you know, there's
but
that
doesn't it
other
help them
end too.
If they can know more, doesn't that help them accomplish their goal because they can target their efforts?
Yeah, but the problem is the fundraising manager doesn't dictate the relationship. It's the donor who dictates the relationship. And if they feel manipulated or not listened to by the organization, then I don't really... The thing is, these days, if you don't like one child's sponsorship organization, you can go to 10 others. If you don't like, I mean, you know, there's so many ministries out there. Mm-hmm. You've got so many choices. And I know that's a whole nother conversation of why somebody initially gives or trusts in an organization. But there's a lot of choice out there in the market. Again, just like the business world. And if you feel that you're not being respected or treated well, then you could certainly go others. Again, going back to the point is that they already give, most already give to a handful, and they kind of, you know, balance that, I would say, most of the time. I mean, there's some situations like a child sponsorship where you give the same amount every month, but that same child sponsorship is also kind of hitting you up for special projects and special things. So, you know, everybody, every month when they're writing out those checks, they've got the option to give a little bit more, or a little less here. So, again, I don't think that exists as much as it should be in those meetings at ministries who really care about shaping the donor experience. Getting to know the donors, shaping that experience on a more customized level where they can make that donor feel that they can trust the organization, that the organization listens to them and wants to have a relationship, you know, not feel like that bottomless well of cash.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds much more personal. I mean, to when you know your donors, you know, that can shape, you know, that should be a boost of creativity for all those people who are shaping those donor letters, those emails, those messages. And so, yes, it helps with practical things like frequency, but, you know, it seems like even the substance of the stories you tell and the language you use in those communications would be so much better if they had that information.
Yeah, I mean, the other part of that is it's work. I mean, you know, most fundraising managers, they work with agencies. They just want to send out one appeal letter, you know, with that copy. But today, you could send out five different appeal letters. I mean, we're in the age where, you know, we've got so many different software systems and communication systems. You could customize an appeal letter and communications better.
And ministries are so multifaceted today. You know, it's kind of rare that you run across one that only does one thing. Mm-hmm. And so I might be donating, you know, for, you know, thing A, and you're donating for thing B. But if we're only getting donor letters that relate to B, I may not be that interested in donating again.
Yep.
Because you're not talking about how my funds were used for that thing I cared about.
Right. And you feel like a number. I mean, I guess that's the thing that you really want ministries to do most, is just not make you feel like a number. So,
well, good stuff, guys. We are over our time, so we need to go ahead and wrap up. And just a reminder to our listeners that our sponsor for this week's episode is the Christian Standard Bible. It's for everyone, for readers young and old, new and seasoned. It's a Bible you can share with your neighbor, hearing God's word for the very first time. You'll find the CSB to be highly trustworthy and deeply satisfying. Remember, we're giving away, let's just say, ballpark at five copies of the study Bible.
Unless Lizette gets generous.
Unless I get generous, unless the gurus of the study Bible. Yeah, so you may just want to keep tweeting to us and just see what you can find out. But you've got to tag at CS Bible and at Lifeway Research or one of our personal Twitter handles, which at this interview, only Scott and I have, and that would be at S. McCon and at Lizette Beard or at Lifeway Research. Write reviews on iTunes and be sure to tell your friends and family to get the word out. Join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.